Right.
Accession number 28670, Mr. David Wilson, Real 11. Now, you were saying about the two instances where you came under fire.
Yeah, well, there was an SP that had a transmission fault, and it was a workshop job, had to be transported to the workshop at Ishmaelia, and I think it was 25th Armoured Brigade workshop. And we used our Scammel. We borrowed a transporter, a trailer, from someone else. And we used our Scammel to tow it with. So we loaded the SP onto the trailer. It was hooked up to the Scammel. And, of course, I was driving, and away we went out through the guard room and along the turn left, along the Treaty Road towards Ishmaelia. And as we got to the bridges over the Sweetwater Canal, that was the first bridge, you had to turn left, and I was negotiating the left-hand turn, and and of course going very slowly, probably in second gear, out of six speeds, and just paying attention to what I was doing. And there was this commotion behind me, and the crew who were with the SP had opened up with their stands, and I didn't really know what it was all about until we got over the bridge and pulled up straight, and there was a hole in the floor just next to my right thigh. It was because you had a in the cab of the Scammel, you had a wooden floor, and that was about between the driver and, of course, at the passenger side, you had a couple of feet between you and the door. And this round had hit the cradle with the snatch blocks in. That's the big pulleys used for recovery. And one was lying at an angle. We worked all this out later to see how it happened. One was lying at an angle. And this round had come in low. It was aimed for me, I would say, because it was heading towards me. Come in low, hit this snatch block, and ricocheted at 90 degrees and came straight up through the floor of the Scammel and plonked straight out through the aluminium roof as well, you know. So that was it. I mean, I didn't know what was going on, but afterwards I didn't feel too happy about it when you had time to reflect on it. And on another occasion, there was a guy who got up into the water tower, and I think he was an Egyptian policeman when they did catch him and got him down dead. He got up in the water tower between between the 3RHA and the next door camp, which was 71st Heavy Agak, and the Nafi in between them. He got up in the water tower and was sniping along the tent lines, you know. So, and of course, long hours as well.
But was he hitting anybody? Or?
Oh, there was a few fatalities, but it didn't take long for them to get him. The flushed him out with somebody with a Bren, I believe, from somewhere or another. But it all happened in the dusk, and we didn't know what was going on until the next morning. I heard the whole story, but there was blokes in one of the batteries had been caught. So it was this was a constant thing, was going on all the time. There was the thievery from the camps.
Tell me about that. I mean, what were they trying to do?
Well, I don't know. I got the general impression that thievery was an acknowledged profession in the Middle East. They seemed to be so clever at it, and you know, there was one occasion we went again duty regiment, and there were some guys from the regiment had been on the train. He used to do a guard on the train which ran the railway that ran down parallel with the canal from Port Tewfik at the Red Sea end down to Port Said on the Mediterranean. And this guy had his stand. He was guard, but he was off duty at the time. He had gone to sleep, and he woke up without any stand, and what he did was he took the sling out and put it once around his wrist and sort of secured it. And the end, he woke up without a stand gun and just the ragged remains of this bit of of a sling still tied to his wrist. And they reckon that they were able to get blankets from sleeping blokes by tickling them, and when they rolled over, they folded the blanket and then tickled them, and they rolled over the other way, and they had the blanket away, like, you know. But I think that the factual occasion that I do know about was when they got into Tel El Kebir, which was, apart from being a Remi base workshops, was also a Royal Army Ordnance Corps, was the ROC at the time, and they had a tyre store. And they used to get in through two perimeter fences. Each one had a 50-yard gap between them. They were patrolled by Dingo scout cars with Brens mounted. There was guard dogs. The ROC had guard dogs on the inside perimeter. And they used to get in through there and get truck tyres out and get them out again and not get caught. To me, it's magic. That it's not just theory, it's magic. But I think the most daring thing was they actually drove a Staghound armoured car out of the main gate, past the guardroom at Tel El Kebir, and they got it away, and they were far enough away to have time to start erecting a building around it, and they were just about to clap the roof on when there was the army used the army air corps, the artillery spotter plane, a little Lysander or something like that, and spotted it before they finally clapped the roof on. But that was the only way they got it back. They actually got it out of the... Yeah, no, I mean, how can you steal a Staghound armoured car under the eyes of everybody? They were clever, very clever.
So did you get out much to sort of like visit? You didn't get out to visit Cairo or Aleppo?
The only time we went down that end was again, it was just an arranged trip, and it was, I think, probably on a couple of occasions we went down to Giza, to the pyramids, and we also got onto the Red Sea, bathing on the Red Sea.
What were these recreational trips like?
Well, it was the usual thing, just sort of hanging on in the back, hanging onto the tilt in the back of a QL Bedford all the way there, and have a couple of hours break, and then hanging onto the tilt all the way back. They weren't really very good.
What were you thinking of the pyramids? I mean, that's...
It was awe-inspiring. Well, all just a mystery, but glad I saw them, as much as it's obviously a bit of history that is well worth seeing and thinking about.
But you didn't get a chance to wander around Cairo or anything?
At that stage, it was virtually all out war. You hardly dared. It was round about that time that they did kidnappings as well. They kidnapped that Lieutenant Robertson, you know, Robertson, the jam people. They kidnapped him and they held him hostage.
Now, was that he was one of yours? Or
No, he was a different regiment to us. But
what do you remember of that?
Well, there was negotiations went on to try and secure his release. But, of course, I mean, it was a humiliation, you know, for them to... I think it was just national service, but he was a second lieutenant, and... I think he was a full lieutenant. And, of course, there was a lot of pressure on the government because of who he was. I mean, his family, obviously, very influential. And if I'm not mistaken, they actually did shoot him. I'm not sure whether they got him out safe and sound or not. But, of course, there was the major event that I recall was the... I'm not sure which... whether it had just happened before we got there or whether it transpired during the time we were there. But the Egyptian police in Ishmaelia in the barracks boarded themselves up in the barracks and started firing at British patrols. And at the finish, they got they had Centurions up there, and they got them out all right at the finish. Lancashire Fusiliers and... I think probably one of the RTR regiments with a couple of centurions.
So you didn't actually go there?
Well, I wasn't there, no. And it, but this was the sort of thing that was going on at the time. So the whole atmosphere in the posting itself was, you were mainly confined to either organised trips out, or if there were official trips out, you were always armed. And somebody riding shotgun with you, otherwise life was on the camp and in the Nuffy.
Now, how did you take to the climate? I mean, you know,
the actual temperature, not too bad, but the glare of the sun really affected me badly. I found that didn't have the sense in the first place. In fact, I'm not sure whether I was allowed to. To wear sunglasses, but I found that for long periods, if I looked above sort of shoulder level, I was blinded by the sun, and that was the main thing. The glare of the sun was the boredom of the whole thing. Longed to see a bit of rain.
So what about things like prickly heat? Any problems with that?
Well, I didn't suffer from it personally, but there was a lot of cases of prickly heat. There was a couple of guys in my tent there. Was down with that, but the.
What about upset tummies? Did you have any trouble with that?
No, not me personally.
Any health problems that you had?
Not at all. I was fit as a fiddle at the time. There were the sort of, if you got a cut, it festered. You know, this type of thing, which you always had sores on your hands if you're working with your hands. You.
Sort of desert sort. Does it swell up?
No, just sort of pussy type of things, you know, full of sort of, you know, down to the MO and get a dressing on and some antiseptic. But apart from that, I didn't suffer from any particularly bad.
So what would a typical day be like for you over there?
Well, we used to parade at breakfast. Was the first thing. There wasn't a muster parade as such, certainly for us. But we paraded at the LAD, muster across there, I suppose. Small parade, and sometimes I would take that, call the roll, and then everybody was in the main self-sufficient. They used to know what jobs that they had on, because a lot of it was continuous. I mean, the gunfighters might be on one battery and they're working their way through each troop turn by, you know, by turn. And similarly, Ed Potter and I were doing either 406s or we had we're about to take an engine out of an SP. And apart from the admin, really, the overall admin of the thing, the stores and the discipline, you are free agents within the system. You got on with your job, and of course if you're an authority and you had anybody under you, you know, they got on with their job as well. But in the main it was a busy life. It was you would either be from the LAD down to the tank park, working on the tank park, having, as I say, engines out and on the trestles doing the servicing, back to the LAD for spares and bits and pieces, any questions anybody wanted. Sometimes somebody would want the ARV moved, come and fetch you. And then occasionally Captain Watson would want to go out down to some other unit, so you might be detail officer's driver to take him out. He generally used to use me and take him out in the Land Rover. This is another thing with the Land Rovers. Used to make those angle iron guards split at the top, because another trick of the Egyptians was to put a steel wire across the road to decapitate people. You know, that was another terrorist activity. That would just came to mind because I remember driving him about in a Land Rover with this piece of angle iron on the front bumper, bracketed to the front bumper. And then we used to break for tiffin, the midday meal, a light one. for what it was worth. And then break off, sort of tea time, have a main meal. Cookhouse, sometimes you would get the cookhouse and miss and go directly to the nappy. And at night time, it was just listening to the radio and people pattering on. And used to get bored with people's company as well. But apart from the nappy and a drink, there wasn't very much else to do.
Did you drink much there or still moderately?
Just moderately, always have just drunk moderately. There was a pub which we occasionally went to, very occasionally, down in Fayed, in the village, called the Green Kettle. It was supposed to be an English pub, but it was nothing like an English pub, really.
Who ran it?
The locals. It was an Egyptian guy that ran it. And the Nafi was mainly run by Greek Cypriots on the camp, who were all right. They were.
Now, you were there, what, about a year would you be there?
Aye, from...
Now, how would the year, I mean, was there a sort of routine, a yearly routine within the, you know, I mean...
It was split up a bit. I mean, we did an exercise across on the Sinai.
Well,
like,
tell us about that.
Well, it was mainly, it became a sort of tail end Charlie thing, following the regiment around the Sinai.
The Sinai Desert.
Aye.
What was it like?
I can never understand anybody fighting over it. It was nothing. It was a negative place. One of the places that I personally detested, the arid landscape, had nothing to commend it. It was just simply sand and scrub, as far as the eye could see. And it was desperate.
And what was it like on the, you know, you didn't like that part of it, but...
No, well...
Were you picking up a lot of things? I mean, you
yeah,
know...
Yeah, I was... There was one or two things happened. On one occasion, we were coming along, tailing along behind them all with a scammel, and M Battery was just in front of us. We were trying to catch up with M Battery, and there was a young lieutenant. M Battery were always the sort of least recognised battery in the 3RHA, the way I see it. J Battery was the VC battery that they won. That was VC's won at City Rezeg in the desert, and that was he was Lieutenant Gunn. He was of J Battery, and so J Battery was a sort of elite battery. J Battery was the business. D Battery was somewhere in between, and M Battery was bringing up the rear. But nevertheless, there was a young lieutenant there. Wasn't National Service. He was a regular. Lieutenant Shewan, they called him, and he was very good. He was a good gunnery officer, good for with his maths, for laying his guns on and this sort of thing. But he also fancied himself a bit like Rommel, and he used to charge along with his troop, standing on the back of this bulkhead, just over the top of his driver, who was a taffy bloke, who was a wee bit on the sort of cantankerous side. Anyway, he used to kick him in the shoulder to indicate either to track right or turn left, or track left. And they were charging along flat out on open sand, and Shewan had kicked this guy, and he had had enough, and he hauled on the tiller with all his strength, and came round in an arc through both tracks. Deposited Lieutenant Shewan into among the ammunition bins in the bottom of the gun compartment, split his head wide open, and of course the radio was no the there was a Land Rover came up to me, and the radio the LAD radio operator came up, and in fact it was a radio mechanic who was operating the radio for the LAD at the time, and he came up on net and requested the scammel to come up, and we charged up. And just as we got there, as out of this picture, there's this SP with the tracks off the road wheels, off the sprocket, and Lieutenant Shewan standing, big tall fella, with blood pouring down his face from this gash in his head, and the colonel, who was a little fella, standing, dressing him down. Lieutenant Shewan, he says, SPs and good drivers are very important, but he says junior officers are expendable, he says. you know, and you're sort of dressing them down. And I thought it was a bit bad form because it was in front of everybody and everybody was standing about earwigging and mouths open and this sort of thing, you know. But, of course, obviously we had to put the trackers back on the thing and get him underway again. But he was showing no sympathy whatsoever for this gash in his forehead. And it just went on like that in the Sinai. It was all just sort of little incidents. And
any others you remember? Were there any problems with, I mean, you know, the Sexton was reliable, but how was it in desert conditions? I mean,
it was good. The air-cooled motor, the system that it had for cooling, as against water cooling, was good in the desert because it was obviously fan-assisted. It had a big fan behind the fins of the cylinder, and it used to circulate the air very well because we never had any breakdowns through seizures. And they used to get a pasting, revving along, you know, sort of flat out.
What about dust?
The dust was dreadful, and particularly when you were following them, particularly in our ARV, if you were following them with the ARV.
But did it sort of affect the air? I mean, you know, you get dust in the air intake. Did that sort of lead to problems?
Well, yeah, with the Cromwell it did, even with these big oil bath air filters. When you cleaned them out, they used to get about 2 or 3 inches of sand mixed with oil, a real lethal combination for wearing things out. But fortunately, the oil bath air cleaners were effective. And mind you, the Sexons didn't have oil bath air cleaners, but they were good. They were efficient enough to stop them from wearing out, you know, at a rapid rate.
Any other desert problems you found out about in the
sandstorms? Sandstorms.
What was the sandstorm?
Oh, bloody awful! I mean, apart from the terrain, I mean, when you were out, if you were out, you recognised the landscape, and then you would get a sandstorm blowing up, and it changed completely. So you didn't know where the hell you were.
What was the sandstorm like?
Oh, it was it used to get in everywhere, and you know, even if you wore those. Used to wear those gas goggles, which were sort of thin, clear plastic. Well, it wasn't plastic at the time, it was celluloid, that was a word for it. And they were close fitting, but it used to find its way up, and your eyes would be streaming, and it would be in the corner. You get half a hundredweight of sand out of the corner of your eye, and of course into your mouth and up your nose. And if you were in the tent lines, and there was a sandstorm at a night, you couldn't get out of the thing in the morning. It was like a snowdrift, you know, up the side. Bloody terrible. Absolutely shocking. Hated it.
Did you have enough water when you were in the desert, the Sinai?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the water bowls I used to follow along. Yeah, there's never any problem with that sort of thing as far as I can remember. water for washing plates and things at the cookhouse was generally rationed, because I recall if you went to the cookhouse and had a greasy meal and you came out and tried to wash your plates and you weren't out early enough, you could cut it with a knife. It was wasting your time trying to use it as water.
Is that in the desert?
No, this is in the camp, right, the cookhouse. Yeah. Oh, in the desert, you generally speaking, you just brewed things up yourself, and you got these care rations, and you used to get tins of Westler's sort of hot dogs. I remember they were triangulated in section. Used to open the tin, and they came out in a sort of jelly as well, and I found them absolutely beautiful. And used to eat a lot of that sort of thing when you were out and about, you know.
What were K-rations? Are they American?
It's the sort of hard tack was the
what's hard tack?
That's the sort of rations that you get in boxes. When you're mobile, when you're away from an established camp.
That's what I mean. You're in the Sinai.
Oh, in the Sinai. You just ate out of boxes all the time.
So you ate know. What?
Well,
there wrestlers, was. But what else?
Well, there was things like dried egg, dried powdered milk, dehydrated stuff that you just poured water on to reactivate. It was palatable, but certainly not, didn't wasn't really appetizing. except for the West Desert.
Anything else about the desert the Sinai desert exercises?
No,
Do you know what you were doing at all, or were you just following them?
Oh well, it was a firing camp exercise, except the whole of the regiment was there. Whereas when you were back in the canal zone, they used to do one battery at a time. Used to do the firing camp, but on this occasion they were deploying the whole three batteries and HQ.
Now, what about what was a battery?
Consisted of?
No, you can tell me that. But what was a battery firing camp like? Would you go? That wouldn't be in the Sinai.
No, this was just out in the West End Desert, just away past behind Fayed, behind our camp at Fayed. Because the camps right along the Treaty Road were sort of strung out, and there would perhaps be just like one building between each one, like we were next door to the 71st Heavy Attack, and just the Nuffy in between, which they shared. But at the back of the perimeter, of course it was all barbed wire, but at the back of the perimeter, our perimeter, you had this escarpment. And bearing in mind, we were right on the side of the Great Bitter Lake, which is like an inland sea, I suppose. And then there was the road, and then the camps, strung out along the Treaty Road. This escarpment had a trig point on top. It was a very high sandy escarpment, and this trig point it was quite high, maybe a few hundred feet. And the story was that this was supposed to be the place where Moses arrived and surveyed what he thought was the Red Sea, but was in fact the Great Bitter Lake, and parted it for the children of Israel to get through across to the Sinai Peninsula. And that was, in all seriousness, that was sort of propounded as the story, and so I believed it, you know, at the time. But it was, so that gives its geographical sort of location. And sort of beyond that, you just had open desert.
Now, what were the battery firing camps like?
Well, they had to fire a certain amount of ammunition regularly, by order, you know, and obviously to keep the gunner's hands in. And they used to use, as targets, they used to use abandoned hardware, like old Italian stuff and German stuff, and our stuff, to fire at, to zero in on.
And would the whole of the LAD go with them, or just part of it?
No, just sometimes it was just the J-battery fitter, and me with the ERV, or the Scammel, either one. There wasn't any particular reason for choosing either one or the other.
Would much happen, or was it just a bit like the Sarnia?
It was a bit like the Sarnia, following people, and then once they got into position, they would loose off a few rounds, and there'd be the usual sort of training. We just stood by and watched, really, and the odd breakdown, the odd query, the odd repair. Some troop commander would want something adjusted or something done. The gunfitters were the busiest. The gunfitter would go out, obviously, on the firing camps, and they were the busiest. And in fact, the initial firing camp that J Battery went out on, there was a lot of misfires, and there was, on one occasion, it shouldn't happen theoretically, but the breech block actually dropped when the firing pin was activated, and it killed two of the gun crew, the backflash. But they put it down to a worn-out breech mechanism, mainly by too much bulling and emery paper. But even then, I couldn't work it out, because there's fail-safe safety factors on the breech mechanism. So I don't know, maybe it was just a whitewash. But the firing camps were generally a bit boring. Just you spent a few days out in the desert, you know, and that was about it.